Let's call the Library Joint Powers Authority Board Finance Subcommittee on Monday, August 22nd, 2011 to order. Will you note the roll? We have an agenda in front of us. We have a motion to approve it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. And we have minutes. Is that really the last time we met?
Yes. Happy summer.
Motion to approve?
Yeah, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And oral communications. Jesse, anything? Okay. Staff reports.
Okay, and I want to thank you for switching back to this Monday for me. And it did mean some scrambling on our part to get information. We didn't have time to get it all out in the packet. So I just put in front of you the year end, the end of June. And I talked to Jack earlier, and he doesn't think this is going to change maybe by about 20,000. That's all he thinks. There may be another payroll adjustment. The bottom line, and that's as far as Barb and I were going over a little bit before, but the bottom line is we're about a million. We're ending the year at about a million, million two, I lost the number now, I didn't. 11.5 minus 10, what's about $1 million to the good? Revenues over expenditures. Revenues were about 500,000 more than budgeted, and we saved about 187,000, I think it was, on personnel, which 184,000. We did have several vacancies during the year that we didn't fill, that we used some temp staff or some other ways of filling it that were less expensive. We were trying to keep positions frozen so that we would lose less. And so we saved, so we did save on our personnel budget. And then the rest, like I said, I haven't had a chance to look at it. I only got it at about 5 o'clock this afternoon, so.
So even though the headings do say 6/1/2011 through 6/30, it's really 7/1.
If you look at the year-to-date expenditures and year-to-date revenues.
Oh, okay. So
it'll.
Okay.
Yeah. If you look at year-to-date encumbrances, and one thing on revenue, the pages 5 and 6 are reversed. 5 is the second page, and 6 is the first page. It's really trying to get to the bottom line here. If you look at the encumbrances, say on page 4, year-to-date encumbrances, they're all zeroed out.
Right.
That's the indication that it's year-end.
Okay.
So I'm not sure why it prints for this one. So the materials budget was right on, so we did spend our money on materials, which is always one I look for, that we not a place we want to save. And we didn't. I think it was like $5,000 that we didn't spend, which is really good. Really hard to get that close. So I'll have a better analysis by the board meeting, but it's good news.
Yeah.
And then the question would be what to do with it. So,
what would you say that in regards to being $1 million over expenditures? What was the forecast originally? I've forgotten what we were.
The forecast was
$1 million under.
$1 million under.
Not over.
Under budget.
It's to the good.
Right. I guess.
What was the original? The projections that we did in about January or February were a couple $100,000 to the good.
Okay.
We did not expect $500,000 additional revenue. I think we were expecting
a couple hundred thousand
additional revenue. So that was kind of a surprise to see that much.
And how close were the forecasts in terms of the other areas? You know, in terms of having the additional $5,000, was there any other areas where.
I haven't had a chance to look at it closely to see where we did projection. I knew we were going to save on personnel, and I thought about around what we did save, I think is what I thought we were going to save on personnel. So I really haven't had a chance to see it. Where else we were really under-expended. And of course, there's some places we were a little bit over. So,
so for revenues, it really was... you know, three quarters of it or so was our sales tax.
Yeah.
And then the other big chunk really is donations. And based on, you know, what we had forecasted was like 25,000, and we got a little over 100,000.
Even maintenance and effort was almost 30,000.
Right.
Which we thought that was going to drop.
And then what is miscellaneous non-operating?
You always ask me that one.
I know, I never remember the answer.
And I've got the answer somewhere. Oh, 20 miscellaneous non-operating is donations. It is the Richardson Trust.
The Trust.
But some other things got in there. I know I have it.
I was trying to find that. So in any case, it was money given to the.
I think that some of that is. Like the Friends, like when they paid for things, like when they paid for Joan Fry Williams, it would have gone in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a donation.
Right.
It's so when the Friends paid for things like that, and they paid. We paid for Ruth. I have these all somewhere.
Well, I'm remembering also the Friends report in our last board meeting where they talked about how much money they had provided to the library. And it was, I think, in the $200,000.
Yeah, some of it they pay directly and some of it goes through us. Revenue, contributions and donations.
So that's the other big piece, which is really...
Other miscellaneous revenues.
Trent.
Oh, we got an E-rate payment of back... Past due rate from past years, almost $40,000. That's in addition to what they pay us ongoing, or the credits we get ongoing. This was money they owed us for a couple of years. So that was a big one, $40,000 from E-rate. Government Connection, we sold back phones. We converted phone systems. We sold back the old phones, so there was revenue there, about $7,000. All those kinds of things. But E-rates, another $10,000 for E-rates, so $50,000 for E-rate. We sold some stamps, got a refund, $304 from Rapid Fill.
Thanks, but I was just looking for the big chunks.
Yeah.
Well, we had almost $8,000 or $7,600 in selling back the phones, it looked like. And this was just, this was in March. I'm looking at the March one.
Yes.
It was probably a newer, there is definitely a newer one. But those are the kinds of things that go in there. So.
Yeah. And it's like the surplus is half unexpected revenue and half underextending. And I was just looking at some of the major... underextending line items, but on page 3, it appeared that there was under software maintenance services.
Oh, that, of course.
That was
a big one.
Okay.
That's the new system.
Yeah, so we saved $72,000 there.
But we're going to spend that this year.
And
we carry that over. So this doesn't include the carryover.
That was just half of, or just a part of the system, and so the other part's being carried over.
Right.
So that we can proceed with that.
Yeah.
And looks like the other one is our with telecommunications outside. We saved $53,000.
But we overspent it on inside.
The other.
Yeah, because we thought it was all coming out of online, and they made us split it.
And I noticed further down on that page, library functional supplies.
Mm-hmm.
We saved almost $51,000. How did that happen?
That's been an area we've had a lot of trouble getting a handle on, because the manager for that area came in when I got here. I moved her in there, and it was right in the middle of the really reduced materials budget. And those are the supplies we use, like labels and stickers and all the jackets and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't come to us that way from the publisher. So when we don't have as much book budget, we're not buying as much, the functional supplies are down. So we cut it from last year's because last year's was really too high based on, but yet we knew we were going to buy a little bit more this past year than the year before. We don't want to cut it too much because we didn't know. And we're also starting to get more things pre-processed, so we didn't have to spend as much directly from there on it. So it's been one of those areas that we, since I've been here and there wasn't anybody with any experience with it, we've been trying to just get a handle on it. So, and of course, next year we're going to spend more money on the materials budget, so we don't want to
cut
take it down.
Then.
So that's when we're still working on fine-tuning.
Also, under training, it's like we saved
almost
$25,000 there.
That surprised me.
Right. It seemed like that's a line that we would not want to short shrift.
Well,
if at all possible. So.
I think what happened there is we got the grant from the state for $40,000 for training. In fact, that's probably part of the revenue. So we got the training. So a lot of the training we've been doing since February has been out of that grant.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't use our regular training budget perhaps as much. Plus we did a lot of purchasing, we did a lot of webinars, which don't cost us very much. So we haven't sent people to as much training outside other than what we've been providing through the grant. So I think that's where, I don't think we'll see that happen again.
Okay.
There's just so much training we can do in terms of time. And that grant, we got an extension on that grant through the end of September, so we're actually doing some more training on it. But we have a lot of training.
Those are just the ones that I wanted to ask about.
No, makes good sense. And I could put it in place.
How much out of $1 million, is carried? There's funds that are being carried over where you might be looking at something less than that.
I am trying. Do we carry over about 100? We carried over some of the training money. I think about 25,000 of the training, 20,000 of the training money, and then the system money. About $100,000 we were carrying over. It's about that. I'm sorry. I'm very unprepared. But it was about. So of that $1,100,000 of it we were carrying. And you also authorized up to $100,000 in case we need to cover next year's personnel because of the vagaries of the new model and stuff. So we're in pretty good shape. I mean, we're in really good shape. It's a nice place to be. I mean, I'm not saying we're flush yet, but things are definitely not.
Although we were just looking at the Santa Clara County. County system, their reserves. 30% of their revenues. Now they may be saving for they have capital in their reserves. We don't. So, they may be saving.
That was from 2006, and they had fund balance, capital, emergency,
economic downturn. So I'm pretty sure that one got used.
But I remember when I first got here 2 years ago, and I met with Melinda, who's the county librarian there, we were talking. I said, well, how much is your reserve? They were sitting on $24 million, which I think this showed $26 million. So.
What's that as a percentage of their budget?
It was like 30%.
That's 30% of their overall budget annually?
Yeah, because, no, it was like $10 million.
It was $10 million.
And their budget was
$26 million.
Wow.
But she said they were sitting on
I expect they used some of that in the past few years.
And they have guidelines that specify how much they keep aside from.
Yeah. It was a report that was done a few years ago. So, and if you have any other questions on this, let me know. I mean, I'll take a closer look, and I apologize for not having it. We didn't even think we were going to have it for next Monday, so I didn't really worry about it too much. I was hoping we would, but I wasn't sure how much we'd have. Okay, so on to you did get a copy of Through July, which apparently there's a number of changes that we made to July. It's very preliminary, but at this point in the year, we're 8% of the year, and most of the things that are high are things that get pre-encumbered. You know, we pay them right away because of insurance or things like that. So it's kind of part of the one I did want to point out. It's on page 12 of the stampy one that here it does. It's page 2 of expenditures, about the fifth one down, telecommunication service outside. Before you ask why we're over encumbered by $32,000, gotcha. I'm learning. That is E-rate. E-rate, we will get credits that will, we encumber at what we, at the full amount of what we expect the bill to be. But by the end of the year, there should be about that, you know, difference in assuming the credits continue to come in. So, and they are there. We're on a pretty steady even keel now for the credits. They're running about 6 months behind, but that's okay because they're coming every month. So we ate the problem already, and now we're just, you know, it doesn't matter what year we're in, we're getting the money, even though it's the money they're giving us now is from 6 months. So. And I didn't notice anything else totally unusual. Our personnel was way under. But once again, we still have vacancies, and we're starting to have retirements. So. So there isn't much to say about
the other, well, financial services outside, it's on page 1. Is that the audit?
Yes. Okay, and that came in higher than what we had budgeted. We went with a new, I think Jack can come in and explain, we went with a new auditor. We had no problems with the auditor last year, but when we prepared the budget, we didn't know it was going to be more expensive. So we'll have to eat the $1,000. Or the $236 or whatever.
Any other July budget questions? All right. Let's move on to emergency cash need.
And I apologize. Kira did send this to me, and I kept thinking it was for the board meeting. I kept not thinking it was for tonight. So I just want to, I'll just give you the brief version here. What I intend to bring to the board, with, hopefully with your approval, I actually did have a full recommendation that the Finance Committee recommend to the board an allocation of we were waiting for the final amount, $54,675 to pay for unexpected emergency capital needs. I understand if you don't, since you're not reading this report, that you don't want to approve it, so I'll just go to the straight board. But to let you know that what it is, we have three large expenses that have emerged as required by law and or in consideration of health and safety. We have had to do mold removal and replacement of infrastructure at Aptos, $32,000. It's $14,000 for the mold removal itself, and then $18,000 to put everything back together again. And I think I let you guys have a heads up on that because we had to close Aptos for a week. So that came in at $32,000. We had a sliding door in the meeting room that Aptos that wasn't meeting fire code. It looks like we're going to be able to replace it with a window, so and we'll still have the right fire exit plan so we can use the facility after hours. We were going to have to make some major modifications to that door and the concrete pad outside it. Now it's only $675, so it's not a big deal. We're going to make it a window instead of a door. We have legally required emission control modifications to the bookmobile, $22,000. And we have to do this by December, and this would be contingent on not getting a grant for a new bookmobile. We should hear by the end of September whether we've gotten a grant. It's not likely, but you never know. In the off chance that we don't get the grant, we are going to have to spend $22,000 on the bookmobile. The ongoing capital maintenance, you know, we've had virtually nothing for the past few years, and a very small contingency in building operations and maintenance. We've done very little preventive maintenance, and there's a lot of pent-up need, and as part of the service model, the recommendation was that we have $40,000 in this year's budget to go towards meeting some of these needs that haven't been addressed in the last few years. Well, right off the bat, we're looking at $54,675. There goes anything that we have to do anywhere else. There's any of the preventive maintenance that that money was put in there for. So I would like to ask the board to dip into the money that was set aside for emergency cash needs, that the reserve that we have started to build. And
you mean out of the $1 million?
Well, it would be the million plus what's already in there, which is 495.
Right, so the right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're now looking at having about $1.6 million in reserve. And we've got so many building needs that, I mean, even 40,000 isn't going to touch the various things that we do. And we've got, you can help me here, at the Central Library.
The ceiling or the pipes that are on the ceiling are corroding and need to be replaced. I'm not sure what the cost of that is.
Yeah. There's that. There's the bathroom. Well, that, and that might even be an emergency need. But,
it could be if we don't do it.
But we've got bathrooms. We need to have work done on them. Do you remember this? Here, I bring 11.
I think it's actually.
I didn't bring 11, 12 with me. There's various painting, various places, just things that buildings need, and nothing's been done for years. So that's what the $40,000 is supposed to go towards. The mold removal, $32,000 for mold removal, is certainly not in the plan. And this is just an indication of what happens when you have, when you're maintaining 10 buildings,
yeah,
and particularly older buildings.
When is the facilities master plan scheduled for?
I'm hoping to kind of give you guys a general outline of the direction I want to take with it at the September meeting. Mm-hmm. I actually had a meeting with someone today that helped solidify what that is. I don't see us starting that study until January. We just can't take anything on this fall. And I've been advised it'll take 3 to 6 months to complete. And the approach we're probably going to take is facilities improvement and funding options. And each facility has kind of a different need. Some things are makeovers, some are remodels, some are, you know, do we tear down and build new? Each facility in this system is at a different point in its usable life. So we're going to have to take each one and define what we want to do with it. But I don't think we're going to do a needs assessment, which is in terms of service needs. We've got the strategic plan. We've got the service model. So those are often part of a facility's master plan, actually, because it's how are you going to use the buildings. But I think we've determined that. We've had a lot of community input in the last couple of years, I would say. So we probably don't have to go strong on that. So I'm going to probably recommend to go that other direction. But it is going to be the rest of this fiscal year, because I like I said, we can't really start.
So we're not going to want to undertake any major facilities project until that
right
comes in. We'll just keep maintaining and fixing.
The $40,000 is just maintenance. It's just taking care of things like carpeting, painting, fixtures that go bad, plumbing problems, pipes that corrode. Last year we had to put a boiler in here, and there's something else we had to do in this building.
A couple of
furnace. Any thoughts on it?
One initial thought is, how would these normally get budgeted? I know these are emergencies, but where would, like, when you think about, like, planning for facility needs on a regular basis, because there is regular maintenance that's required.
Ongoing capital maintenance.
And that's where you budget that normally?
It would be, if it were robust enough to handle unplanned needs. A tree hits hits a roof, and you got to do something, or you don't plan on a septic system failing.
Basically, we've under
budgeted
that for
years,
a number of years.
Yeah.
And so if something happened big, like it was going to take more than we have, I guess things were just juggled around and other maintenance was pushed out.
I just wondered if we could, you know, allocate certain monies to put some in for facilities if we have these needs. I know we need to do a larger facility plan, but if you already know there's certain expenses we're going to have, maybe we look at funding those.
We did, and that's where the $40,000 came from. That we budgeted $40,000 this year for capital maintenance, and none of these things were on the list.
Right. Okay. We're just increasing. But I guess I was thinking just from an emergency fund. I guess that's normally when that's how you normally.
That's why this board established an emergency. It was an emergency cash reserve fund. It was for two reasons: one, to handle cash flow issues, and one, to handle emergencies that we were unplanned. I mean, we should have more in our capital maintenance, but this was the best we could do given the service model, you know, given what we were dealing with.
And I think if it weren't for the mold issue, you would have found a way to slip the rest of this into the budget.
Yeah,
it's the mold.
The mold is the big one.
Yeah.
The bookmobile is a big one too. But
it seems something that you've already had the work done, or it's in the.
Well, we had to have the work done.
So,
I couldn't get approval. I mean,
yeah.
And I could take it out of the $40,000 we have, but then we're done. You know, there's nothing, no other preventive maintenance goes on, you know, none of these other needs get met. And
For the bookmobile, when will you know about that grant?
End of September.
That's great.
We needed to be able to move on. I couldn't wait necessarily for the October meeting. You know, if we don't get it, we need to be ready to do it.
I was talking with Leslie. How old is the bookmobile right now? It's pretty.
97, I think.
Yeah. And what's their useful life on it? Because I'm sure they put a lot.
We have it scheduled for, I can tell you that.
They just replaced the fire truck from, I think, about that year.
Thank you.
That's true.
And it probably did put a few miles.
It's about, bookmobiles last about 15 years. Is their usual?
Yeah, they're just about there.
Yeah, we are just about there. We pushed it out a year in order to save money.
And how much?
Freightliner. It was supposed to be replaced in 2014-15. We pushed it out to 2015-16.
And that's built into our.
That's built into our vehicle replacement fund. Vehicle reserve.
We don't have to. We should have the funds for that.
Yeah, but that's why we're looking at about $40,000 a year, because we're trying to. Usually, you start the day you buy a new bookmobile, you start saving for the next one. So 15 years later, you've got a nice pot of money. We haven't done that, so we are starting in 2011, 4 years later. And $40,000 isn't going to do it. But they're running about $250,000 now, give or take.
Can I,
Jessica?
Yeah. No, this is kind of. I just wanted to say that the quote unquote surplus that we're talking about, the 1.7 million, that is in fact the, you know, it is the $900,000 cash flow surplus that we're talking about that keeps us from having to borrow money from the city every month in order to meet our payroll. So it's not as though that is money that's over and above what we need. That's our operating expense money. I was just bringing this up because I know David wasn't here, you know, as we worked our way out of the negative cash flow situation that we were in for several years. And it was kind of juggling that Barbara mentioned that we had done in the past to cover emergencies that set us up for the situation where we had no cash flow at all, no cash flow reserves. And we wrote that last check for the Aptos parking lot and discovered that we had no cash. And then we were in a period of a year plus where we borrowed money from the city every month to meet payroll, and we paid them interest. So,
and the city kindly at some point told us that was not their desire to continue to do any longer.
And you just start
now.
We may want to ask the library now for.
Well, that had been the history of the past. The library was in better shape than the city, so I'd like to see us there again.
But I always get worried when I see gleams in everybody's eyes about, wow, we're 1. Whatever million to the good, because that's really what allows us to make our payroll for the next month.
Right, and that's why the board last whatever set a goal of, I don't know, 8% or something, as to keep those. So if our reserves went below a certain amount, we would have to figure out a strategy for getting them back. because of that cash flow issue.
And the goal was to do that, to build that reserve up over 5 years. Well,
where
we may need to run it.
Yeah.
Right. So that doesn't mean we'll have to decide. In this year's budget, we didn't put anything aside for it. Next year, we may decide, you know, to continue that, you know, we want more or maybe not. That'll be the board's decision. So we're really just, you're right, we are just getting to where we need to be. But the idea behind that was that it could also help cover some emergency kind of expenses that came up.
Yeah.
With the idea, I think, that it would be replaced. So if we do spend this $54,000 next year, we may well want to contribute the $50,000 we're budgeted in the five-year plan to give back to the reserve. Because if we're borrowing from it, we should repay it.
So I just want to go back.
You're already borrowing $100,000.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
So, well, right.
Yeah.
That's what it. Well,
right.
Maybe. I mean,
right.
So that has already been
right.
Put into the budget potentially.
Right.
So, I mean, it's so either way. I mean, it could be just pretty much a wash. Whether
yeah.
if you do it for these expenses, which sounds like I mean they needed to be done, and you know we shouldn't allocate some funds for it. But.
Just you know, we're on the one hand, yeah, we've got the reserve back. On the other hand, we were also okay with waiting a few years to get the reserve back, so do we want to continue to starve ourselves in terms of other maintenance that needs to be done and not dip into the quote reserve now? So that's kind of a decision to be made, but
we're kind of borrowing from ourselves under that circumstance
yeah.
and paying the city mm-hmm. the interest rate that they would charge us if we drop down to a certain level and can't make payrolls at some point.
Mm-hmm. But we've been,
you know,
interesting for cash flow purposes, we haven't had to borrow for over
no.
a year, and
right.
the reserve wasn't
right.
that high. So I think we're in pretty good shape.
Well, I think next year
we're not flush. Like I said before, we're not flush.
Next year, seeing really what's going on with revenues will be a key to how the board would want to handle
right.
Reserves going forward. Because you know, hopefully, this is not a one-time
yeah.
revenue.
And
trend.
And we looked at a few pieces of it are. You know, the E-rate money was.
Yes.
I mean, yes, it was owed to us, but we finally got it, but it was, we're not going to see that kind of money again, although I think they still do owe us about $35,000 we're trying to get, so I'm not going to count on it.
I just had one other question. With the $22,000 for the booking wheel, that's it was just routine maintenance? Or
that's a legally required emission control modification.
Wow.
State.
Oh, really?
State?
Maybe we should, that's what I was asking, if it was just state. I mean, I'm sure, like, if a new one is $250,000, I wonder if this has value in another state where you can save that. I mean, I don't know what the...
It's not a huge amount.
Send the polluters out.
Well, I'm not encouraging...
Outside California where they don't
like,
care.
I'm sure it's probably...
Then it's Texas.
Somewhere downwind.
There's a pretty limited market for used bookmobiles. We'll get something for it, but actually, Corvallis, we sold our bookmobile on eBay.
The reason why I was bringing it up because we were talking about selling the shuttle that's now downtown. There's a group in Oregon, you know, they're going to pay $100,000 for the trolley.
The trolley?
Yeah.
But we like the trolley.
We elected not
to sell it.
Now it's operating all the time, but I mean, you would never think that had that level of value.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it has some value, but we don't really. I mean, if we get the grant, it'd be really cool. Well,
I'm prepared to make a motion to recommend these expenditures. I mean, I know from following the Aptos remediation of the mold and work, I mean, it was required. I just didn't know as much about the bookmobile.
Yeah, that was been kind of. We've kind of known about it. We've kind of been ignoring it, hoping it would go away. Like, maybe they wouldn't really make us do it, but they are.
Were you prepared? Would you prefer that it come before?
I did have a recommendation that the Finance Subcommittee recommend to the Library Joint Powers Board a maximum allocation of $54,675 to pay for unexpected emergency capital needs. But if you don't feel comfortable because you're not seeing this in writing, I do understand.
I'm comfortable
with
it.
Okay.
I
if
that's your
motion,
I'll second that motion.
Okay.
But just also on these recommendations, always, we had passed a policy where we had to designate various kinds of reserves, and so will we need to do that for this surplus? Or
no,
say
it was already indicated in there where it was supposed to go.
It was?
Yes.
Okay. So that's been done. Okay.
Yeah, that was done.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much. I do apologize for having it running. The other one I had in writing and disappeared is I just wanted to run by you that I'm also coming in September. This will be a long board meeting in September, just for a very packed agenda. Performance indicators, you would ask that I show some performance indicators for the new service model, and so I'm going to be bringing some of those for the various areas. And so I just wanted to run by, I was trying to think of a couple in the financial area, and I'm very open to creative ideas on these, but what we came up with was two performance indicators, and these are to measure whether the new service model is working, how well it's working.
So you and your staff would likely track a lot of other data.
Yes.
Which the board could see, but I think
right.
This is like the subset of what do we really need to know to see whether the new model is working, the transition and the new model is working.
And so the two that I had were expended budget is within 10% of the budget, yes. That we expend within 10% of the budget. And the other one, financial projections support expanding hours, taking into consideration the other performance indicators, which you don't have yet.
Say that one again.
I know you have to. Financial projections support expanding hours, taking into consideration the other performance indicators. So the idea being that the financial projections say we've got the money to expand hours, but before we go ahead and do that, we look at the other performance indicators and make sure they're all positive and good. For example, if we have a performance indicator that, I don't know, says 85% of patrons found what they needed, okay? And we do a survey and find out that it's 25% of patrons found what they needed. So the question would be whether we should put money, if we've got money to put into something, should it go into hours or should it go into whatever it's going to take to make that performance indicator be better? So that we're looking at the different areas and making sure that we're not just looking at the money before we add hours, but that we're looking at how are we doing in general on the other performance indicators that we agree to? Because we're going to be agreeing to performance indicators, if I have my way, in areas of collection, service, programs, use of volunteers, technology, facilities, staff development. And those aren't definite yet. I'm still working on them. But for example, say in facilities, we had a measure that we all agreed that if this model is successful, visitors per open hour will increase 10%. And the board agrees that this is a measure that if the model is working, that's what we're going to see. So if visitors per open hour is only increasing 5% and we have money, where should we, you know, should that go into, should that go into being open more hours or should we be doing something so that the visitors per hour, we don't know the answer to it yet, but looking at the other indicators and balancing it with the financial piece to determine what's the best way to proceed in the next phase.
I think that's what the overall performance indicators, the purpose of the overall performance indicators is, to look at each of those sort of functional areas, volunteers, training, service, et cetera, as well as the financials.
The whole thing has to balance.
The whole thing. So any one indicator wouldn't necessarily, that isn't good, that's not meeting expectations, wouldn't necessarily tell us that the model's not working. it would tell us there are some issues we've got to look at and figure out what we can do to improve. If we had, except for the financial ones, if we don't have the money, we don't have the money. I mean, right. Really, in my mind, that's the one that can crater it. The other ones, unless there were a majority of them that we weren't meeting, if we weren't meeting, you know, every other one, then we'd know we had a problem and would have to regroup. But I mean, I think it's something the board's going to have to discuss to figure out, you know, just how are we looking at, what are we expecting from these indicators? And when the board reviews them, when we have data to review, when you have data to review, I won't be here, you know, how are you going to handle, because they're not all going to be met. I mean, it's a given, they're not all going to be met. And even if we hadn't changed to a different kind of model, they probably still would not all have been met. If we're just going along status quo and how we were operating. So I am not necessarily, I think that saying the financial projections support expanding hours, taking into account other performance indicators, I think taking into account other performance indicators is what every indicator would say. I mean, this is just the financial piece. So you need to know you've got money to actually do it. Mm-hmm. You're always going to take into account all the other indicators, I would assume. Is that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't mind leaving it in either. And just, it seems assumed. It would be assumed. So maybe you need to clarify.
Well, that's, yeah. Here's another one that maybe is easy. Better perspective, and I don't know that this is going to be one I'm going to recommend, but it's one you've been talking about. Number of branch operation critical shifts, those are the 8 hours per week at the six larger branches for which volunteers were absent. So if we're having trouble filling those volunteer shifts reliably, and we're dependent on those shifts in order to make things run, if that number, and what we'll have is a target, you know, and if that target is, in this case, if the target were higher than, you know, what's an acceptable level of absenteeism. And if the level's too high, we're having a real problem there, and we've got money available, projections say, yes, we can add hours. My question to the board would be, should we add hours, or should we try to fix this problem and maybe not use volunteers in those places? And before we add hours somewhere else.
Add hours, do you mean open hours or staff hours?
Open hours.
Open hours.
The phase 2 hours.
Well, I know. I mean, and I'm just trying to think about how this will work because, as I recall, that I mean, when we're going to go to phase 1 in January, at the beginning of the calendar year, and then phase 2 in July, right, the beginning of the new next fiscal year. Are you going to have enough? I mean, so first off, the phase 1 is going to happen. You're not going to have any of these indicators. You won't have any way to test that. We're just going to increase hours in January, okay?
Yes.
So that's done.
Right, that's done.
And I can tell you, I don't know if I'm going to backtrack from that, regardless of what these indicators say.
Okay. No, we're going there in January. No, I'm not saying
that. That's the base.
That's the base. So January is where
base.
We start.
Okay. So we're going to maintain that base. And then over the next 6 months,
and we're going to have to look at the data sooner than that because of budget reasons.
Well, so three, four months mm-hmm. As to whether or not we're going to go to the full open hours, or that's where we're going to use our money. I don't know. I just don't know that that's enough data to kick us off of this initiative that we've already kind of put out there, that these are going to be the hours that are the branches as of, you know, a certain point in time. And so, I understand the thing about, okay, if your volunteers aren't showing up and we got some money, yeah, put it into staffing, because you got to have reliable personnel, you know, taking care of things. But tying it to whether or not we go to the next phase of open hours, I don't know. I don't see how that would be workable. Or to delay that, or saying changes to our service model. Short of there being not enough money, I think that's the primary indicator about open hours and that schedule. So those are just my thoughts about it. I don't think I would want to see the financial piece tied to now further analysis about whether we should go to those open hours.
I mean, I know not to go back to that first, you know, several months when I was on the board, but I think that's the heart of the issue as far as, you know the hours at what cost to do those additional hours cost in terms of other services and programs. And I don't know, we didn't really talk about this, but at one point, maybe this is just something that's a general board discussion, but are different, do different branches value different programs and services over open hours? If that's, you know, something that could be brought into the mix where you start to look at, you know, what are the types of programs and services maybe that are factored into a particular branch, you know, maybe their specialization. It's not just a matter of a, you know, we can review things differently. Just because we had that discussion, there might be, you know, priorities that come about because there's going to be maybe service deficiencies because you're focusing on staffing up at a certain hours. But just going just to your the performance measures, that first one you talked about, that's what I think of as a variance report. Is that what you're talking about? Okay, so just a variance report in terms of what your projections are.
Just saying that we're staying within.
Yeah.
Staying within budget. I mean, it doesn't excite me, but I couldn't think of anything.
Well, no, that's pretty. That's
right.
That's
you need to be managing your budget.
Yeah, you need
right.
That. But then the other, I didn't understand when you say financial projections taking into account branch hours. I guess maybe this is what you were saying, Barbara, that you're just looking at discrete kind of metrics as far as, you know, what happens in terms of the branch services, how many people are visiting the branch or what the cost is to staff.
We're going to have indicators in all different areas and we're still working on what those look like.
Have you calculated how many volunteers you need for all of the branches to meet these hours so that even if we weren't open that level of hours now, knowing that you could recruit that many, like having, you know, that would be a metric I think would be important to see that you had X number of volunteers signed up ready to provide service. And if you don't meet that level, you know you're going to have a gap up front. That would be one. So it's not purely a financial metric, but it's one where it just speaks directly to whether or not you're able to fulfill kind of a point that we discussed in terms of the use of volunteers to maybe operate services in the branch that make up maybe for some of these costs. So that was one I was thinking of. The other is because of the time frames, how do you get feedback from the patrons? I guess we're just talking financial, but whether or not their level of satisfaction is with the services or how the monies are being used. Because it's, I mean,
we don't have a lot of time before next budget.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. We'll only be about 3 months in. We are counting opinions as a service we're subscribing to this year. Helps us gather statistical data, but it also has a survey component in it, so we can do surveys rather easily online. We can also print them. We can do them by print. So we can do some pretty easy surveying, but we won't be very long into the service model before we have to be asking questions. But to be honest, to me, that was one of my concerns with going to that second phase in July. To me, it was just way too soon. We're implementing something that is so radically different, both for staff and for public. And I mean, the important key to any program is evaluation. And we don't really have a lot of evaluation time built in before we're ramping the whole thing up to the next level without knowing what's working and what's not.
Well, that's the case. It seems like we should be talking about, and I don't think that's a finance subcommittee issue, frankly.
Right. No, that's why
whether or not should we put off that phase two, okay? And that be the direction, not trying to tie it to an accelerated data collection and then analysis and conclusion process in such a rapid, short period of time, because I just don't I don't think you would get valid information to be able to draw that conclusion as to, and then pick and choose in various places. So if it is, I mean, are we, is this the best place we're spending our money? Then maybe we should say, well, maybe we should put off the whole thing collectively, okay? And use that approach instead of some sort of data analysis approach to it. So
I totally agree that we're probably not going to have great valid data in time to finalize a budget that incorporates all of that for the next fiscal year. Although I do think that the board did ask Teresa to bring back these indicators, and I do think that the board should be looking at them. Some of them may be easier to get data on and maybe more valid data sooner. Other ones won't be. Other ones, you know, you can't expect to hit a target maybe for a year as you're changing things. But I think that at some point, budget time would likely be the time. The board would need to see whatever data and indicators Teresa has so that at that point a decision can be made. You know, are things looking pretty good? Are people pretty happy with this? Are we having any major issues? Do we have the money? It may be that there is enough information and things are running smoothly enough so that, you know, staff comes back and says, you know, everything's looking great. Yeah, we don't have every piece of data, but it's gone way more smoothly than we could ever have imagined, and we've got the money, so let's go. Or there may not be enough data for us to say, you know, we don't feel, there have been some issues, we don't feel comfortable in taking that next step July 1.
What I was planning was for each of the measures indicating a baseline, if there is one. Do we have one now? Some of them are more amenable to that. A target for a year from implementation, so a target for January of 13. Then, for some of the indicators, and the board would need to pick which, you know, I can make recommendations, but the board ultimately would pick which ones, which of these performance indicators should have a target that will influence the 12-13 budget. Which of these indicators can we look at the end of March and give us a sense of how things are going so that we would have some data for March and we could have some data for the end of June, and we could put off improving the budget till, you know, sometime in the end of June. And then basically do them quarterly, do the indicators quarterly. But identifying up front which are the ones we want to look at that we think we may have enough, even a sense, that can help to influence the 12-13 budget. So my goal would be that the board would agree on what those are. So we go into it agreeing what we're going to use as an evaluation tool before we go forward with expanding anything or making big changes. So that's kind of where it's going.
And I think also the indicators, the data, is only one piece of what's going to go into the decision making. Because I think there will be other updates that will happen along the way if any issues occur, any unexpected problems, any things that aren't working as anticipated, any things that are hopefully working better than anticipated. So there, I think, along the way, from January to June, there should also be the quality and qualitative kinds of information coming to the board via staff, via, you know, patrons who are contacting us directly, or staff inputs.
They're already starting.
So I look at this as I believe we need performance indicators that are geared towards assisting the board in making the next decision, big decision that we have to make, or the next big move in the model, which is stepping up the hours one more time to what the board agreed to. But that said, I don't think that's all we're going to use to make that decision. and we may not have sufficient data to make that decision, or we may.
I can see how you could and to arrive at, I mean, you're saying a particular branch is underutilized and therefore you're not going to go to the full list of hours. But if that's the purpose of how that would be used, one, I don't think it's valid in that short period of time to evaluate whether or not there's been sufficient operating practice to get people to use it, and therefore that particular branch is going to be kind of clamped down, okay, which would perpetuate the problem. I'm all for looking at data, collecting and study, and us constantly doing that, but then tying it to whether we actually go to phase two of the increased hours, which was basically what the system historically had in terms of set hours. Maybe even a little less, but those were structured based upon historical practices over many decades, okay? And now over a matter of months to say that we're going to mess around with that, I find that extremely difficult to be able to do and to be able to draw those kind of conclusions, okay?
I wasn't looking at it on an individual branch that you'll get your hours, but you won't because you're these are all system indicators. These are not even broken down to the branch level. I was looking at it more as a system. Do we move forward with expanded hours for everyone? And you can even look at it, say there's a branch that hasn't done very well, that they haven't, their usage hasn't increased. So before we go to more hours for everybody, should we be doing something to see what we can do for that particular branch, that, you know, what's going on there that's not working? What can we do to make it work? And should the money be going there rather than anybody else getting open hours? I really wasn't looking at targeting a particular branch and saying, you don't get your hours because you didn't meet your indicators. That wasn't my intent at all,
Is that more of a phased approach to what you're thinking?
Well, I was trying to look at it as the system. Before, I mean, I'm looking at the system moving to the next set of hours. Right. I wasn't looking at Scotts Valley is and La Selva Beach isn't. That wasn't what I was looking at. I was looking at, are we ready to move to that next level of hours? And what do we know about how this new system is working? Is that where we need, is that the place where the money should be going, or should the money be going into even collection, I mean, when people tell us they never find what they want, even though we're open, maybe the extra money, if we have some extra money, it should be going into increasing the percentage of the materials budget from 8% to 10 or to 12.
Like, from a system standpoint, what would be, like, for the January implementation of those hours and the July second phase implementation, what would be the costs, like, in terms of, I know we looked at this several months ago, but in terms of, like, having that as a framework to see what, like, when we look at, what we would need to have to maintain that level of service.
The same level of service that we can provide in January, but with more hours. But provided the same way, the same kind of staffing that we're using in January.
No, I'm thinking of what, based on the recommendations of the task force that we had those, what the July cost would be, the budget to actually maintain those hours of operation, the expanded hours, as well as the January hours. So you have at least, you could forecast, what it costs to operate. I mean, there's other personnel issues, but knowing what the budget would be to maintain that level of service. I mean, that's a clear indication. I mean, we might have a $900,000 or $100,000 surplus or from last year, but what would something like this look like if we were operating consistently at that level?
I think that's the financial projections indicator that, I mean, clearly, and that'll be a budget issue, but you have to project out your revenues and your expenses given that, the phase two hours and see what that would cost. And if we don't have the budget, then that's a conversation that has to happen. But if we do have the budget, and hopefully we would have the budget, the revenues to cover that expense, I guess the question is, for the board, asked Teresa to come back with performance indicators. We didn't really, I guess, specify what we were going to do with those performance indicators. And so the question is, what is the board going to do with those performance indicators? Are we, and I think we were generically saying we want to gauge the success of the new model so that we know if we're having problems, so we can fix those problems. And that would be ongoing. That would be, you know, beyond July. We would want to keep that going. But if we're going to do those performance indicators, it would certainly make sense to me if you want to look at them and factor them into any budget decisions that are being made about increasing hours. So I don't know. Maybe it's just how it's perceived as to what these indicators are for.
So if I'm hearing you, that it's an indicator that says financial projections support expanding hours, period, and that there's another discussion that takes place on how we're going to use the performance indicators as a whole to move forward. Will take place at the board. I mean, I guess what I'm recommending is that the board really take a large view, a system view, but not just of the finances, can we afford those extra hours, but what are the other needs? What are we identifying as major issues that might need some funds? And then the board would have to decide, do we want to try to fix this problem or do we want to just expand hours because we said we would, and that's more important. And it may be. I want to make sure that the board agrees to balance all of it. And I suppose you don't have to. I suppose the board doesn't have to do that. It's your choice. But that would be my recommendation, that there's a lot. I've really gotten a sense that there's some people that may not understand the drasticness of what we're doing. I think it's finally hitting staff.
I mean, we knew what was kind of
new, but it was still, there's still people in a state of shock.
Does everybody here know, due to the budget, the new service model and the new staffing plan, 15 positions are being cut?
Yeah.
An additional 15 physicians are having their hours cut to part-time, either half-time or a little bit more. And the remaining staff are expected to provide more open hours as of January 1st. So moving beyond that to phase two is going to be a difficult task at best.
I mean, to me, the best indicator is before increasing hours is, are the services that the library is providing with the base level hours, we'll call them, acceptable? And if that isn't, it's not really a money issue. It may be a money issue, but it's not really a funding issue. But to me, it is, well, if there are certain things that aren't being done in a way that is acceptable, whether that's through quantitative data, you know that, or through qualitative information and anecdotal data that you know that. And there's, I'm not talking about just one little thing. I mean, it would have to be a major issue or a lot of little issues. The board would need to understand that in order to say, we want to increase hours because we already know how to fix these. We've already figured, staff has come and said they already know what's wrong and they know how to fix them. Or staff needs money to fix them. And if that's the case, can we afford to go to the increased hours? So to me, it's not just a money issue. The money issue has to be satisfied. Funding has to be there. And once that happens, then it's really, is the library going to continue to provide, is the library already providing the service that we expect? And can it continue to provide that service going forward with the increased hours? That, to me, that's the basic question that the board has to answer, and if the indicators can help the board understand whether there are issues and where those issues might be, I think that would be the best use of those indicators. And of course, help you understand the same things.
And that is going to be the goal of the indicators that we're coming up with. We are looking at trying to come up with indicators that really do look at the new way of providing service. Because we are changing how we provide that service and what service we're actually providing, how much is self-service, and how is it working? You know, are we getting the levels of self-check that we want? Are people telling us that the reference service they get is good or better? Because they're getting it in a very different way than they were before. Can staff handle things the way we're looking at it? The volunteers working. You know, what is that costing in terms of, we've got a volunteer coordinator, but how much non-volunteer coordinator time is it taking to manage those volunteers? And, you know, there's a lot of things to look at. So, in terms of financial indicators,
think of any other financial indicators. I think financial projections have to be there so we can cover the costs, and I think we need to be meeting our current budget. I don't know what other financial.
Well, the standard balance sheet indicators, I mean, I'm not sure what the purpose of this and how long, I mean, it is just tied to our immediate transitional phase. If you're looking toward long-term indicators of health, it's usually a balance sheet question. And, you know, there's standard tests that are applied. You may recommend some of those.
So maybe there's a longer term. And then, I mean, to me it was, how can we tell whether this new approach is successful? And then there's the longer term ones, which is whatever model we have, whatever we're doing, you need to have your balance sheet in order, you need to have your patrons satisfied, et cetera. But I think what Teresa is saying is these are really geared towards understanding the success of this sort of change.
Yeah, that was my understanding of the charge from the board, was they wanted performance indicators to measure the success of the new service model. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I understood to be at this point.
True.
At
no,
least,
yeah.
And I think longer term,
the indicators will definitely change over time. But for right now, we need to be looking at, is this new model working, and agree on those indicators so that we're not, we all agree on what's important.
I can't think of other financial ones. I think that.
Okay. Well, if you just think of anything, let me know. I'll be working on this next.
Will we be discussing other criteria at the board meeting?
Yes.
Or
okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. The whole list will be there.
Do you know in the library industry, what are, you know, when you look at evaluating service levels, or I know sometimes where other library districts might look at, you know, whether or not services are allocated appropriately, what best practices in the industry?
Turnover rate, which is circulation divided by collection size divided by circulation.
That's per branch.
Turnover rate, usually for the system.
Okay.
You could do it by branch. There's a lot of per capita. There's expenditures per capita, books per capita, materials per capita.
You know, if you go out and look at the California State Library website.
Mm-hmm. I just got the book today, as a matter of fact.
They have, they collect data from all of the state libraries,
mm-hmm.
Which to me are the kinds of indicators that obviously a lot of libraries are collecting because they can provide it to them, and are the kinds of things that you can compare across time for a single library or compare your library to other libraries in your size category, et cetera, and there's tons of them.
CERC per capita, a lot of per capita. CERC per capita, materials per capita are the big ones.
Personnel per capita, staff, librarians,
budget for personnel. There's a lot of them. And then there's a number of qualitative ones, typically reference services. Doing a survey, a user satisfaction survey is like, you pick a percent, 85% of users looking for a particular title or subject indicated they found what they came in for. And you ask them, as you survey them as they're leaving the library, did you find what you were looking for today?
So I was wondering if we, I mean, one of the thoughts I had when we were discussing this is that there would be an increase in branch visits, right? If you increase hours, there should be more people going. And are there certain goals or expectations that
right.
would take place in regards to the number of visitors you would get per additional hour? So if we know that it's going to cost, X number of dollars to operate each hour for these services. You know, are we getting a return on that by increasing the number of visitors per each branch? And if not, are we spending the dollars appropriately? Do we want? I mean, what other ways can we invest, you know, the library resources in ways where we're going to increase services in ways that we can generate utilization?
Well, so I have visitors per open hour increases.
Yeah.
But to Sam's point, too,
we don't have enough.
The 6 months, or it'll be less than that, between January and when a decision would need to be made, you're probably not going to see huge changes in patrons because there's a huge time lag, and it takes a long time for people to understand what the new hours really are. So I think it's a good indicator and needs to be looked at because it may tell us we need to get out there and tell. Do better marketing communication to get people in. Do they really know there's more hours, or is the question you're not really using the hours?
Right.
There's hours that are not needed.
Okay. Well, it'll be an interesting discussion.
September
12th. 12th. The 5th is Labor Day.
12th. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
I'm hiking half the time.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. So
be careful.
You don't have to move. You can come in a wheelchair. PLF funds for fiscal year 11-12. That's the public library fund. That's the state money, state funds that libraries get. Last year we thought we were getting $70,000. We got $74,000. This year I budgeted nothing. We may get about, I think it's $16,000. But we won't know until January. It's part of the trigger thing.
The revenues.
If the revenues are high enough, then they're going to release money in January, and the public library money is part of that. So if we get it at $16,000, we didn't count on it because I didn't count on the $70,000 because I thought it was gone. But, so it'll just be found money, which we can
have a party
with.
If it comes unrestricted, we can
spend
it, carry it over, and do it. Have a party.
Theoretically, I think it was originally designed for collection, for library collections, but it's not.
It's so minuscule. You compare it to what many other states provide for library.
When I saw the original amount we were supposed to get, and I don't have it with me, but it was, I think like $600,000 is what's in the legislation. It would be our share if we were getting the full amount. And it's been cut, and I don't know if you know the history, it's been cut over years, but a couple of years I've been here, I don't know if they cut it slowly, but that $600,000
is down to $70,000. We haven't received based on what the state.
I happen to notice the number being about $600,000 is about the value of the furlough.
Yeah. And other states. Not all other states, obviously, but a number of other states. They're cut back, but they're still so far ahead of
us. The point is they didn't want it taken out completely. So that's why you know the amount is not much that we might get is still in there. So don't spend it all in one place.
Okay. Right. Any other questions?
Well, I just wanted to make on this month-end cash balances report.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent June figure is different from the one you just handed out, which I assume as compared to the one that's in the agenda packet. I assume this is probably more recent. So
this one was 5:00 today. The other one was last week.
Yeah. So you want to adjust this June figure on the agenda packet one.
I'll just include this one in there. My guess is there's an extra payroll. It's worth it.
Okay, so...
They said that there's a number of adjustments on this July 1 that they haven't made yet, so...
Our next meeting is September 26th.